This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Sub-Team Track 3, String Contention Objections and Disputes, held on the 18th of April, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room only. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Karen Day. Please begin.
Thank you, Terry. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon. And good evening for those of you in Europe. This is Karen Day, for the record. Welcome to Work Track 3. And we will begin by going over our posted agenda to see if anyone has any additions. Obviously, the welcomes and the review of the agenda, which we're doing now. Next, we'll move on to updates on SOIs. Then we will receive a update from the full PDP working group, full PDP from Avery. And then after that, we will move into a continuation for a brief while of our discussions from last week on community issues, specifically on defining community and any other community-related topics that anybody on the call today wants to bring up. And then our last scheduled agenda item is an introduction and a beginning discussion of the applicant freedom of expression issue. And the reason I wanted to go ahead and get into this a bit today is because a portion of this issue, one aspect of applicant freedom of expression, concerns geographic names. And as I hope you all are aware, we're going to be delving into some hefty work on the geographic names issues beginning next week with our meetings on the 25th, community-wide meetings. And so I just wanted to get us thinking about that as we move forward into next week. And then any other business, and then that should take us to the end of the hour. So first, I'd like to open it up now to see if anybody has anything they want to add to the agenda or suggest that we not have on the agenda or make any other changes. Not seeing any hands, not seeing any comments. So we will move on into our second item. Does anyone on the call have a statement of interest update that they need to alert us about this time? Not seeing any hands or in the chat. I do note that we have several new members today, first time on the call, and we appreciate everybody joining in our work. We've got quite a bit to do here. So welcome to those of you that are first time joiners here. We will now move on to item 3, which is an update from the full working group, the full PDP group. Avery, are you available to give us that update?
Hi, yeah, this is Avery speaking, assuming I can be heard.
Very well, okay. Thank you.
So just briefly, we at our last full meeting, we basically had a discussion with the folks doing the CCT review and got a lot of questions clarified. At our next meeting, we will take, because we are also submitted a set of questions. At our next meeting, one of the things we'll be discussing is any comment that we might be putting in. And we have to make a decision at that point on the comment and putting it in. In terms of other stuff other than the work streams, which are all reported and all seem to be moving along, And the community comments to the CC2, which has now begun and been translated into all six languages. So that's ongoing. Encourage your groups. We do have a request pending to extend that by 2 weeks, and we'll talk about that and make a decision at the next meeting. We have the GeoGNAR is being organized, and perhaps Jeff at the end of my comments will want to add something to any of this or to the webinars. But we have a number of position speakers. We will have 2 sessions. Most of the speakers will be at both, but not them. And those are next week on the 25th. We could probably put the times in here just to make sure people have them. The drafting teams from Community Comments 1 are now up and running. We'll have to see what kind of schedule we can get those on. And I think that's about it. Have I forgotten anything, Jeff? And do you want to add anything to geographical?
It took me a second to get off mute. Hopefully I can be heard.
Nothing. I'm probably okay. Oh, there you are. Okay.
Sorry. I think, Aubrey, you might have a delay again. I might have a delay. The only thing I wanted to say is just make sure that you sign up for the webinar. Hopefully Emily could put the sign up link or, you know, where to sign up. So please RSVP for that. Even if you're in the group, I don't believe we've automatically signed everyone up for it. So I would encourage everyone to attend. We certainly have the facilities for it, and please come join the group or join.
Thanks, Jeff and Aubrey. Jeff, I do have one question with regard to the GEO webinar. I noticed this morning that a reminder to sign up was sent out by staff to the PDP mailing list. Are we, those of us in the PDP, are we free to forward that email about signing up to our other stakeholder groups, constituencies, and that we are participating in to broaden that last minute? Okay, I see Emily. Yes, please do. So I will do that, and if others would care to do that as well, that would be appreciated. Thank you. Does anybody have any follow-up questions for Jeff or Aubrey regarding the plenary before we move in to our work here? Not seeing any, we will move on to item number 4, which is our follow-up section on the work begun last week while I was on vacation, thankfully, and Robin very ably led the meeting. And so please, Robin, feel free to jump in and correct me. I'm still catching up just a bit, but as I understand from listening to the recording and the discussions last week, we sort of came to the point last week where we felt like a potential stumbling block for the group was that we needed to come up with a definition of what a community is, what we consider a community to move forward. And so that was going to be the first thing that I wanted to lead off with. But before I do that, I will ask Robin to jump in and give us her thoughts. Robin, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Robin for the record. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, great. Thank you.
Okay, great. So, yeah, I think we got a good discussion going last week, but we really need to come to more a decision, I think, about what it is that we're trying to achieve, because it seems when we talk about this notion of a community that is given these special privileges in the new GTLD context, it seems we don't really have a shared idea or a shared understanding amongst ourselves in the ICANN community about what it is we're really trying to achieve and who we're trying to privilege and why. So a lot of times, you know, you hear people complaining about the notion of community applications here at ICANN because they might say, oh, so-and-so wasn't considered a community, and I think they should have been considered a community. Or you hear so-and-so was considered a community, but I don't think they should have been. So, we've got such a broad spectrum of what people think we're trying to do here with this concept of community that I think until we have a shared understanding, we're all going to be kind of operating at cross purposes. So, you know, some people think the concept of community should only be underprivileged or non-commercial or persecuted or, you know, that kind of a community. Other people will say, no, banks and affiliations and associations of commercial entities, that could be a community too. And then everything in between, including people who just want to identify as a certain label, so to speak, it could or may not be considered a community depending on who you talk to. So I think we do sort of need to take a step back and ask ourselves, you know, what is it that we're trying to achieve here? And try to build a little bit, put a little meat on the bones of the definition so people aren't so confused or aren't so disappointed with the concept because their idea of community did or didn't live up to what a panel or somebody else's idea of what a privileged community at ICANN should be. So that's just my, you know, sort of take on the issue, and I don't want to take a position on this at the moment. I just kind of want to say I think that we as an ICANN community need to have a shared understanding about what we're trying to achieve here. So that's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. I appreciate that. I see we have a queue forked, so let's move on to Aubrey.
Hi. Yeah, this is Aubrey. One of the things I wanted to mention is that, you know, staff has started taking a look at what are some of the statements that have been made in terms of defining community so that those can be looked at. And one of the things I wanted to also add is that when we're talking about community now, we're getting closer and closer to talking about types of community. I think, you know, when we look at definitions, if we try to find one global definition of community, you know, we will have one kind of challenge. We may also just need to keep ourselves open, you know, further subdefining and coming up with types. I don't know if that will help us, but it's something we might want to look at. And that's about it for me for now.
Thank you, Aubrey. Next in the queue is Jamie Baxter. Jamie?
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, great.
Hello?
Thank you. We can
Perfect.
Hear you, Jamie.
Thank you. This is my first meeting as a participant. I've been observing the group for some time, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I think one of the things that I would like to challenge everyone with is specifically the optics of the word community. I think without a real definition around what community is, it sends a mixed message because there are groups of people or populations that are referred to very specifically using the word community, and in our case it's the gay community. It's how we refer to that group of people, yet to go through the community priority evaluation and it be determined that in fact you're not a community is a very strange thing to have to absorb. And so when looking at the current definition, it certainly provides, I think, what we all believe is the flexibility for the variances into types of communities. But if it's the word specifically that is used in ways that clearly defines a group, it sends a strange optic. And so in not only looking at what is the definition of what we believe is community, perhaps it's also important to look at selecting a different word if, in fact, those who are referred to by their community are not, in fact, the community that ICANN is intending to portray.
Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate that perspective, and welcome aboard again. Next up, Alan, please.
Thank you very much. Robin's description implied, sort of as I was listening, that there could only be one answer, and I think part of the issue in my mind is that there are multiple types of communities, and although we may want somewhat different rules for the different types of communities, commercial versus non-commercial as an example, I don't think we should preclude having communities for the various different modes of operation. The challenge, I think, is really how do we resolve issues if you have multiple groups claiming to be the community for X, and if they're not willing to work together and you have to choose which is the better community, then I think we're going to have some really interesting challenges, and I think we need to provide some level of guidance for whoever's making that judgment. But I think we need to be really open in terms of the classes of communities that we're going to allow. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Yes, and just before we continue on with our queue here, I will say that one of the things that I had thought we may need to think about doing is before we try to define community per se, that we might need to have a discussion on making sure we have consensus on the principles. And again, that leads to what you were saying, Alan. Are we trying to come up with one definition of community that fits everybody? Are we going to segregate and have different definitions of community that will be used in different contexts? And so definitely I think that's something we're going to need to explore. Jamie, is your hand an old hand or is that a new hand? If it's an old hand, could you take it down? There you go. Thank you. Next into the queue, Ann, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Karen. It's Ann Aikman-Scalise of the IPC. And on the subject of definition, I feel as I'm in line with those who are looking for a broad definition. In last week's call, we had a discussion about one of the principles or purposes being, you know, freedom of expression, which, of course, invokes the idea of freedom of association. And so I don't know, in terms of searching for another word other than community, if, you know, association works, or if we even want to go to that level of trying to change how we refer to these things. But I do think that the concept of freedom of association is a principle that's important to the definition of community. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Ann. I appreciate that. Let's see, I'm looking at the chat here for those that are just on the line, and the discussion seems to be around using a different term, as Jamie had mentioned, and Jeff notes that they used to be called sponsored TLDs in previous rounds, and that they were all accepted, and now that their communities, very few were accepted. It's interesting to note to me, I was looking at something the other day that sponsored, while it still has that context in looking at our historical documents, if you were to look at the current registry listings, you will see that every registry is listed as being sponsored by someone. So, again, we've got some terminology issues here within ICANN that we need to tackle. And Robin says in the chat, it is important to remember that we are creating classes with special privileges in top-level domains, and that will impact existing rights like intellectual property rights. And Alan says, part of the concept, I think, is that the rules of the top-level domain are governed by a community. Does the top-level name need to be a not-for-profit? Alan, is that if it were to be a community, you're posing that query for not-for-profit?
I'm just asking the question. In my mind, I find it hard to think of a community TLD that is a for-profit at the same time, but that may just be me. The entities that make it up may well be for-profit, of course.
Right, right. Again, there's... I tend to agree with you. I can't think of one that wouldn't, but I don't know. I also, on the other side of the coin, tend to agree with Ann and Jamie that might be a limitation that we don't want to put, but have mechanisms in place to determine if a for-profit applies or if anybody applies, what are the thresholds, be it, and that they be consistent and fair, be it a profit organization or a for-profit, a non-profit organization or a for-profit organization that is applied. I'm going to go back to the queue here and see. Jamie, did you have something to add?
Yes, Jamie Baxter. On the last call, Ann commented on the lack of data for communities, and I think that's something that's incredibly important to keep very top of mind when we talk about this, because of the very few community applications that that pass through CPE, I believe there's maybe one that's at launch stage so far. And so to actually look at the data that comes from, you know, is there a reason to have priority for communities? I don't think we can answer that question based on data right now, because we haven't seen what effect or what accomplishment actually comes from awarding a TLD as a community. And so I think it's important that this stay an open conversation because of that, but that we also be very cognizant of the fact that a lot of what we're going to talk about is in somewhat speculation as to whether it's effective or whether there's a need to provide some sort of privilege to communities.
Yes, thank you, Jamie. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I think we need to remember that the concept in the first round, and I'll use the term round there, was that implies that there's social good associated with having a community TLD, because we would, if we established something as a community TLD, if it passed the test, it had preference over a regular TLD. That is, it would get it instead of going to a commercial one. So it's the social good aspect that implied they should have priority over the other types of applications. And I think we need to remember as we're going forward that that's the case. Now, of course, if we don't have a round and it's a first-come, first-served basis, then I'm not sure there is a need for community applications unless the community application has some other benefits, lower prices, different rules or something that were not the case in the first round. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Yes, once again, that brings to light the dependencies, the interdependencies of all of this work going on, and how things like first come, first serve could potentially impact our work. I see Ann has her hand up, and I was actually going to ask Ann and Robin a question. And so I will, because I'm interested in the discussion that you're having in chat about whether or not community impacts freedom of association. And so I was going to ask for a little bit more clarity on that discussion for others who, like me, may not be connecting all the dots here because we're listening to the conversation and reading the chat. So, Ann, go ahead, and if you could please say whatever you wanted to say, and if also you could speak to that bit, and then we'll let Robin speak to why she doesn't agree with that and add some more data points here. Go ahead, Ann. Thanks.
Great, thank you. I guess I would have to say I'd be against a total division based on profit and nonprofit, and also whether or not there's a social good, because I think that ICANN, you know, very specifically avoids content regulation, and I think, you know, deciding what community is for a social good and what community is not for a social good is a dangerous area for ICANN to be in. And secondly, I feel like on freedom of association, there could be communities. The example I gave in the chat was, what about an association of kennel clubs where maybe, you know, they just want to promote discussion about dog breeding around the world, and they want to promote things like standards for breeding dogs and take positions against puppy mills and things like that. And could there be a community of kennel clubs that has the main kennel clubs from all around the world, but maybe they're for profit? And, you know, maybe there, as a community, there is a lot of good that they could do for the animals. You know, who's going to decide whether that's a social good or not, or whether they're a community? I think we have to be really careful about limiting, I guess, freedom of association, and deciding, you know, what we think is good and what's not good. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Anne. And again, I will, before I move on to the queue, I will say to Robin, and I see Gigi, if you have different perspectives, I think it would be beneficial to us to discuss, if you could discuss them with us too, because the chat is kind of hard to pick up on the nuances. Moving on, Greg, please, go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. Sorry I jumped into this conversation a little bit late. One of the things I think we need to do is go back to the first round and see what we've learned from communities. I recognize that, you know, we're not far along, and the fact that community applications have lagged behind the rest of the program is a point to consider in and of itself. But I'm not sure that I think I found in one place a list of the community applications. I'm not sure if it's complete, but it looks like there were 28 of them, and several of them obviously were contention sets. And I think we need to look at kind of what we can learn from those applications in terms of, you know, who applied then and whether how they would fit against some of these criteria that we're discussing now. I think the answer is some would not fit particularly well. We need to think about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think because the community applications got priority, it became an opportunity for creative use of the criteria of the concept of community, or what some might call gaming, in order to either gain an advantage over a competitor or over a others who might want the same string. So I think that in and of itself, the whole priority situation, the whole priority evaluation situation, the issue of how to resolve objections or appeals to the decisions, you know, has become and continues to be one of the most fraught aspects of this whole program. And I think we need to kind of consider fully what a freaking mess communities is for the first round. It is one. And I think, you know, nuances of whether the applicant can be has to be a nonprofit versus a for-profit, versus an association or a trade association or some other thing that is, and trade associations themselves are nonprofits, even if they're not non-commercial, et cetera, et cetera. I think we're already getting, we're about three levels too nuanced over the issue of, the fact that this is in many ways disastrous. You know, not compared to things like the bubonic plague, but it's really not a, it's not the finest hour of the new GTLD program by far. So I think we need to go back and look at the facts of what's happened and the facts of the application, and what's happened with them and all of the thousands of communications that have been sent to, I think, at least hundreds that have been sent to the board and others, trying to resolve, unresolved contention sets over communities. It just strikes me that, with the whole, and perhaps, as Anne was saying, we need to reconsider what the concept is of a community and why we give a community this priority, in terms of, what should be a community, and not just an opportunity, for priority. One might even consider taking away priority and thinking about where that leaves us and whether that would change the landscape of what we saw in terms of the first round. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. And to your point, we do have some data collected on the community applications in the first round. And while we're moving on to get to Alan and Robin in the queue, it might be good now if Steve, if you could load up your spreadsheet, and after we hear from Alan and Robin, we'll let Steve walk us through this. This was emailed to you all yesterday, and get us familiar with it, and we can begin to use it as a point for future work. Greg, is your hand old, or did you have something else to add? Okay, you're gone. Alan seems to have dropped out of the queue. So, Robin, please, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I at the risk of sounding a little bit too much like Greg here, I share much of the frustrations. And, to sort of go back in time when this matter was before council, and we were looking at it, we had to ask ourselves, why are we creating this concept of community and the two privileged certain TLDs over others, over the general pool, over competing with existing rights like IPR, free expression, things like that? Why are we doing this? And I think the sense was because there was this notion of there is some social good here, that there is some attempt to recognize, as some have said, underprivileged or persecuted groups who might need a little bit of help, and that was the intent. However, I don't think it was really ever codified that way. It wasn't defined that way, and so everyone is now trying to decide what that social good is, and that's kind of what the process of going through the community applications has been. It's been everyone's different idea about what that social good is that ICANN should be promoting. And, it seems to boil down to community is a group of groups. And if you are a group of groups, you get these special privileges. And, for some people, that's a bit frustrating. If you've got competing rights or you're just, an average citizen who didn't think to, quote, game the system this way by, by identifying yourself as a community in order to get in it, this privileged batch of applications. So I think maybe we do have to sort of take a look at how the whole community process has played out and how, it was perhaps well-intentioned and we thought we were going to help the downtrodden, and the way it actually worked out was it got totally gamed, and maybe we're, because everybody's got a different idea of what social good is, maybe we're actually better off not creating these special categories of privileges in the end. I mean, maybe that is the lesson. We need to rethink this whole concept. And if we do think it is a good idea that we do, there are certain categories that we should be privileging. Let's focus on those, and let's create a policy about those. So that's just sort of taking my co-repertoire hat off there for a second and just giving you my own impression of how it's played out over the years. Thanks.
Thanks, Robin. I appreciate that input. And I think what I would like to do now is let Steve have, we're at about 20 till, let Steve have 5 or 10 minutes to walk us through his spreadsheet here and get us familiar with the data that's in here and so that we can take this away and then have some discussions during the next week or so about whether or not we do need to back this conversation up, as some are suggesting, to you know, the purpose of having communities at all, and really start back at building block one and move forward from there, trying to build consensus. But I think that's a discussion to have on the list and then to come back to. And I really would like to spend about 10 minutes before the meeting closes looking at the geonames issue so that we can be thinking in the right vein for our geonames works next week. But I see Jeff has his hand up. So, Jeff, if you care to speak, and then we'll let Steve take us through our spreadsheet.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to make a comment on what Robin had said about communities intended to, or the underprivileged and those that need to help, and really was only available to those that are gaming the system. I think I don't share that view necessarily. I think it all boils down to how do you allocate names in the namespace when there is contention. And obviously, we've come up with one way, which is an auction. But it was thought by many that having an auction was not result in the most effective allocation of names of a public resource space that was being used. And therefore, it also came down to looking at the TLDs that were introduced prior to this last round in 2005, when we had this notion of sponsored TLDs, where it was incredibly easy to get into, you know, it was supposed to be a limited round for only a few sponsored top-level domains, and everyone applied, get them into a sponsored category, and so it really wasn't a category at all. It ended up being too easy. This round, last round, ended up being way too hard. I think there is a middle ground. I know that there's a middle ground where we could, again, I'm not sure that it is necessarily right say that TLD should only be allocated via auction and that the auction is the most efficient way to allocate domains in every single circumstance. If you remember in 2000, or you don't remember, but only a couple of you were around, but in 2000 it was a pure beauty contest. It was which application looked the best on paper, which one had the best companies in the background supporting it, and it literally was, you know, which applications look the best. And, you know, while I was at Neustar, we benefited from that. We benefited because we earned good proposals, and we had a lineage based out of Lockheed Martin. So I think that got us the top-level domain that we applied for, along with some other factors. But, again, I think what we have to think about or not take this concept of community in isolation without thinking of the allocation methods, and is there a certain, although we don't want to, we may not want to go to a pure beauty contest model of which sounds better than the other, we do need to figure out a way that is not pure beauty contest, but also does result in a deserving association or group getting the namespace that will actually use the namespace for something other than you know, normal, regular TLD model. And if you win a TLD at auction, you are most likely stuck with, or in most cases, introducing the traditional model of gTLDs without innovation or without necessarily the innovation that perhaps taking a step back we'd all, for the social good, like to see. I think we need to consider all of that. I don't believe all of the people that apply for community are all of them game the system as what was said. I think there are a lot of legitimate ones and some that didn't qualify for whatever reason. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate that input, and I see others supporting that as well. I think what we will do here in the in-between time, Robin and Jeff and Aubrey and I and the other PDP leadership will, you know, talk about these core issues and try to come up with a plan for some a structured way through this, because I think communities is like one of those things that some of the other topics, other work streams are dealing with, that like closed generics that we could, in the RPM situation, that we could sit and talk about in circles for months on end. And let's work on getting a straight path, or at least as straight as possible, a path forward to make some progress here. So with that, Steve, if you could come online and introduce us to your spreadsheet and the data contained therein, that we can move forward using it as a tool for our work.
Sure. Thanks, Karen. This is Steve Chan from staff. And to be sure I provide credit where it's due, I would give credit to Emily for putting together the sheet, the bulk of it at least.
Yeah. Thank you, Emily. I apologize. Didn't mean to slight you.
So the spreadsheet that we're looking at right now is really the result of the community priority evaluation. So it originally started as just the results. We'll see under outcome whether or not they prevailed or not, along with some of the high-level data about, like, the application string, who the applicant was, and things like that. But what we added to the sheet recently, and maybe I can sync it for just a second so I can make sure we're all looking at the same thing. So if we're looking at the end of this document, what we added to this is just a little bit of extra data related to the CPE outcomes. We have the overall score, which was out of 16. We added the individual breakouts for the four different areas. And then, so at the very bottom of this, what we've also added is the average for each of these, averages for the total outcomes, and then also for the individual four areas. So for each of those things, we've added average and median scores. And then at the very end of this document, we have links to any related reconsideration requests for that particular EPE. There's perhaps other reconsideration requests that might not be related to CPE, but they are perhaps related to that string. But these ones that are listed are just in relation to CPE. So like I said, it's just some data points that the SAC might want to consider when they continue their analysis.
Thank you, Steve. Does anyone have any questions for Steve or for the group or the leadership about the spreadsheet before we move on? Okay, see none. The chat seems to have yes, Jamie, go ahead, please.
I think it's also important to add here that there is a current investigation undergoing by the new CEO, and that is looking at all aspects of the way the community priority evaluations were undertaken. So despite having this data of us, I think it's important that we all remain with an open mind as to what comes back from that investigation as to how this part of the process was actually implemented. I'm not sure when that's expected. It was signaled in Copenhagen that it would be coming out, at least an update would be coming out immediately, but I don't believe that has come to fruition. It's something to keep a signal for.
Yes, thank you, Jamie, for alerting those of us that might not have been aware that that was ongoing. And we and leadership and staff will be sure to keep our eyes and ears open for that and bring that to the group at such time that it does become public and a resource available for us. With that, I will ask if there's any last comments for communities before we move on. Anne, go ahead.
Yes, thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thanks. Very quickly, I would just ask that as leadership is, and it's Anne for the transcript, as leadership is thinking about ways, structural ways of addressing the questions of definition of community and whether we're using the right words and profit or nonprofit, I'm sure it's in my statement of interest that our firm represents a number of Native American communities. And I would like to point out that these are not, you know, nonprofit entities, but they do have, you know, names that can operate as top-level domains. And these Native American communities, if anybody on the phone has worked with any of them, one of their biggest challenges is not losing their cultural identity and not losing their, you know, cultural, their language. And so, you know, limiting them from making a community application when there can be, you know, populations of particular tribes that live, you know, in different parts of the country, in different parts of the continent. The whole issue of indigenous peoples, please keep this in mind as you're thinking about how you structure definitions of community. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. That's a very good concrete example that we need to keep at the front of our minds as we're making these deliberations. We are now at 10 minutes till, so I am, oh, I see, Michael, did you want to speak about community?
Yeah, I actually had a question for Anne. I threw in the chat, but I guess she jumped on the mic before she could read it. But I just wanted to ask, if a community, for example, as in the Native American communities, say it wasn't an established nonprofit by law, if the model behind the TLD itself was perhaps a non-money-making or a non-for-profit model itself, well, basically not establishing profits to the company or the community behind the community TLD, could that notion or could that idea be used to tie into the model of the community TLD? This is just free thought, and maybe if we can reach towards some direction in that area. That's my question. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Michael. I think that we were some of us were discussing that earlier, that maybe using profit or non-for-profit as a hard and fast criteria shouldn't be used, but we should concentrate more on fair and equal review of content of the applications and their purpose and goals for that purpose rather than be it profit or non-profit. Okay, so let's bring up, if we can, staff, the slide deck on freedom of expression, and I'm going to do, we'll have a very high-level overview, and just to get everybody thinking about the GEO issue and how this plays into our work in Workstream 3. We had a, while staff is uploading the slide deck, we had a brief introduction to this topic back in February. Actually, this is not the slide deck, guys. You have the one I sent yesterday? I think it had today's date on it. It may have actually had May date on it because I seem to have been dating everything yesterday, May. I'm trying to get summer here quicker than what it wants to be here. But anyway, while we are waiting for that, with regard to freedom of expression, one of the aspects of freedom of expression is the ability to use geographic names. That is based on some international law, which I can share with you when the slides come up and I remember it. There we go. Can I drive with this? Emily, can I drive? Or there we go. Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody. Start back at the beginning. One of our guiding principles for our work is that string evaluation must not infringe the applicant's freedom of expression, rights that are protected under internationally recognized principles of law. The two recognized principles which most relevantly impact this work are the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And interestingly, both deal with this in Article 19, they talk about the ability for persons to express themselves in writing or verbally, which definitely would apply here. The issue, as identified by the discussion group, is whether or not I can give adequate consideration to the protection of human rights with respect to new GTLDs, freedom of expression, freedom of association, and principle of non-discrimination. Our PDP has been tasked with examining GAC advice, our processes, and reserve names that impact this goal. The reserve names piece is a part of Work Track 2. Our piece in Work Track 3 will deal with the GAC advice, the processes, both in application and appeal. Excuse me. And as always, we have several interlocking procedures going on that we need to be peripherally aware of. Subsequent procedures, Work Track 2 is doing the reserve names. There's a cross-community working group on corporate and social responsibility with respect to human rights that's going on. Accountability Work Stream 2 has a subgroup on human rights, and then the GAC has the Human Rights and International Law Working Group. Previously, a report had been issued by the Council of Europe in 2014, which issued some recommendations and which are here in the slides, and they'll be on the wiki for you if you want to look at them more specifically. I'm running out of time here, but the GAC used this as the basis to come up with a proposal in 2014 here on the last slides, where they set forth proposals for the community to comment on, which severely limited the use of geographic names at the top level. They're two of the key recommendations. Or that geographic names should not be allowed to be registered as TLDs unless requested by the relevant communities where they belong or after specific authorization by the government or community representing that name. The national community and geographic meaning of requested strings as new TLDs must prevail above any other interest. I think that's key. And then governments would retain the right to oppose delegation of TLDs based on its perceived sensitivities and national interest. There were quite a few responses to this. One that I wanted to just highlight today, so to give you an alternate perspective as we go into the presentations that we'll have next week from all different viewpoints, was presented by the civil societies where they felt that these type of restrictions would have a very chilling effect on applicant freedom of expression. And so just for 2 minutes, if you could, Robin, since your firm was one of the signatories to this document, if you could just give everybody just a brief insight into issues that we should be looking at and thinking about as we move into the GO work next week on what effect proposals such as this might have on freedom of expression.
Absolutely. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, great. Thank you.
Yes, so our concern with this proposal had to do with a number of issues. It was, for example, it was extremely broad. I mean, it wanted people to have to go get permission from any government authority, any relevant government authority, but who really knows what that could be. If you wanted to use a TLD or word in a TLD that a government sort of laid claim to in some way. And it's important to realize that, you know, these claims that these governments have over words are not internationally recognized laws. There are some national laws about how certain words can be used within their own jurisdictions, but it isn't anything that applies outside of those jurisdictions. And so there was a lot of concern about other people in the world's right to be able to use certain words that a government might feel sensitive about or might want to lay claim to for any reason whatsoever. And so the ambiguity and the breadth and the stifling of innovation by requiring everyone to go get permission from governments all the time and stifling of freedom of expression by not allowing for legitimate uses of words in TLDs simply because the government doesn't approve of it and is able to use ICANN as a leverage point to prevent that kind of expression. So I guess I've probably gone over the 2 minutes there, but that's a very high-level picture of some of the concerns that we raised with this particular GEC geonames subgroup proposal. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. And as we are at the top of the hour, I will close with saying, as obvious here, we're going to have proposals at both ends of the spectrum. We're going to have everything in between. But I just want us to be aware of how this does feed into our Work Track 3 issues, and I look forward to having you all participate. With that, we are out of time. If anyone has anything else, please raise your hand now. I see Jeff says it should be noted for record that this version 3 of the GAC subgroup has been abandoned for now. For the record, please. But just be aware that is the kind of thing that we could see next week. Closing comment? Maybe that's an old hand.
I'm sorry, that's an old hand. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you all. Thanks for great discussion today. And we will look forward to speaking with you again here at Work Track 3. Our next meeting is May 2nd. Thanks, and have a great rest of your day, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. And thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.